Welcome to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH, streaming on all those smart speakers like Amazon Echo and Google Home. Parents continue to be ignored here in Washington State. They might not be willing to take it any longer. That is what's trending.
What's trending in the classroom?
We started in Bellevue, where the school board members made their decision to close two schools after no meaningful outreach to parents, no real seeming interest in talking with the parents of the kids who are going to be deeply impacted by this. They made the decision last night to close Will Burton and Eastgate Elementary. They will close at the end of this school year. Part of the reason why they're doing it, the biggest reason they're doing it, maybe the only reason they're doing it, is not just because of dwindling enrollment numbers right now, but the projections over the course of the next several years continue to see a downward spiral. I argue that it is in large part due to, number one, COVID restrictions closing down the schools. Parents knew that that was the wrong move. They care more about their kids than they do supporting some public school that doesn't care about them. And number two, woke curriculum, where this is a district like so many others in Washington State that have leaned into the crazy. We've done a number of stories about critical race theory quite literally being taught in the classroom. Not the through the lens of CRT, which is obviously also going on, but when you have an introductory course and the book that you're using is Critical Race Theory, an Introduction, it's kind of on the nose. We know exactly what it is they're doing there. And kids weren't learning. Parents noticed. Parents said, I'll go somewhere else. Some of them left and went to a different district. They moved. Some of them went to private schools. Others went to homeschooling. There are a lot of different options available. And it apparently was working enough for the families and the kids to not re-enroll. And as a result, you've got less money coming into the district. And they just couldn't keep these schools open. Now, the board directors who decided to vote yes, Carol Watson, Joyce Shui, and Seema Serafin, they voted yes to closing the schools. You have Christina Chu and Jane Arras abstaining out of utter cowardice. One of them, of course, cried. Jane was the one who cried. I'm just trying to do what's best for everyone, and I don't know what to do.
So we have to pick the least worst option that we can find.
But my thing is, how do we do the least amount of harm to our kids?
I don't know, but I do know that you should have probably spoken to the parents and did it in a meaningful way and in a good faith way. Ultimately, they knew they were going to vote to close these schools before they even opened up the conversation about which schools to close. They knew they were going to close schools. Which ones? They probably didn't know at the time, although they knew they had a short list in mind. Maybe they didn't know specifically that they were going to close Will Burton instead of Ardmore, for example. But they knew they were going to close these schools. And rather than be upfront with the parents, they decided to keep it to themselves up until the very last minute where they said, actually, we're having this conversation that we might do this. If you would like, why don't you show up to one of these school meetings? When's the meeting? In 32 minutes. Oh, okay. So you don't want to give us any time. No, we don't. We've already made up our mind. We're only going through the motions so we can say that, well, technically, we followed policy and we opened it up. Parents, of course, are pretty ticked off.
One of the greatest cities in the state, with a bounty of brilliance, with a bounty of money.
Well.
And this is the precedent that's set.
Yeah. You're the only district in the state that is closing schools currently. Have you thought about that?
They probably haven't thought about that because, in fairness, they won't be the only district in the state closing schools. Seattle will likely close some schools. And if they don't close schools, they're going to be firing a whole bunch of people. Because Seattle is dealing with the exact same issue. There are a lot of districts in this state dealing with this exact same issue. And the same cause is behind it. Wokeness. Closing schools during COVID. Unnecessarily long. The next big story is going to come out of Seattle. This will happen very, very quickly. It'll happen within the next probably month or two. We already know that it's coming. It's not a secret. And there's going to be more fighting there in Seattle. But here's the deal. They are about to feel the wrath over in Bellevue. A wrath of parental activism unlike anything they've known before. Because as Como points out, there's a new group of parents who have joined the fight. On the one hand, you've got the moms who you've heard from before, and you never want to mess with a mom when it comes to their kids.
And you coming into here that we would either have a right turn or a left turn, and it looks like we're turning left. And I think we'll figure out the best way to proceed, whether it's appeal, whether it's legal action. There are some disenfranchised children in this situation that will be represented, I assure you.
Now, you can already tell from her tone, she's passionate about this. She wants to move forward. But there's a new group, according to Como, that's getting more involved in this fight. Chinese immigrants, specifically with kids over at Eastgate. In the Eastgate neighborhood, there is a large number of Chinese immigrants. And while I all acknowledge you don't want to mess with parents, you definitely don't want to mess, when it comes to education, with Asian parents, particularly Asian moms. They will destroy you. They will look at you and give you a look that is so damning that you will immediately turn to stone. Or that's when you look at Gomorrah. I can't remember if that was from the Bible or if that was from a story in San Francisco. But there are a lot of parents, Asian parents, who across this country, when you look at the activism that has been done against schools that decided to hurt kids by taking away their right to being admitted. There was a story out of San Francisco, another one out of, I can't remember which city, I think it was Fairfax, Virginia, where basically schools that were performing really, really well said during the BLM movement, we have too many Asian students. We don't have enough Black and Latino students. And so they changed the admissions policies. They decided to change the admissions policies. And after they did that, less Asian students were at those schools. And they suffered the wrath of the Asian American community. It was rather dramatic. In fact, when you go look into the recall election of the San Francisco school board members, even though the conversation has been mostly around the wokeness, and that was why it got such widespread support, but it started because of one particular school and the district deciding we're going to actively fight against Asian kids coming into our schools on the name of diversity. Just remember, Asians aren't a racial minority to folks on the far left. They are like white people. Welcome to our club. We got Jews and Asians in the group of whites because our data points don't reflect the message that folks on the left wanted to reflect. We do too well academically. Asians do better than whites because they take it very, very seriously. The family structure takes education really, really seriously. I feel so bad, almost feel bad for what's going to happen to these poor school board members. Do not mess with Asian American parents. They will destroy you. I'm scared. And I'm on their side.
You're scared.
And I'm on their side.
Yikes.
That's how scared I am. Here's a parent. She spoke with our sister station, Kara News Radio. Her name is Kelly. She explains what this means for her family.
If they close, it means our family going across the freeway to finish their last few years in elementary school. It means not knowing what middle school they would go to. It would possibly mean us leaving the district.
That's how far she's willing to go. It might force me to leave the district. Meanwhile, earlier this morning in Seattle, the disinterest in listening to parents met with the disinterest in tackling homelessness. And it led to a protest over an I-5 overpass in North Seattle. These were parents of kids from John Stanford International School. This is the school that is mere feet away from a dangerous homeless encampment that the city and the state and the county refused to clear. It is dangerous. My favorite sign this morning was from a dad who had, it said, you don't have to accept housing, but you can't stay here. Get it? It's like at a bar. You get it? It's like at the bar.
It's St. Patrick's Day. Yeah.
I thought that was a really good slogan. Another one pointed out some of the stats of this particular Ship Canal Bridge homeless encampment. 33 fires, 41 crimes, 3 shootings right by a school. It's really as simple as that. She could have included a homicide out of those three shootings. But you only have so much space. And she was a small woman. You didn't want a sign that's bigger than the actual woman holding it. I would have added to that. You have a dangerous encampment literally feet away from the school. And the King County Regional Homelessness Association, they will not clear it. They refuse to clear it. Instead, they're leveraging these homeless people for subsidized housing for a $12 billion budget. While, by the way, giving all their full-time employees unlimited vacation. I talked about that on Fox Business earlier this morning. The mayor of Seattle is too much of a political coward to get involved. They can go in there right now. The city can go in there right now and clean the entire sweep. The folks who are there are breaking the law. Just because you're breaking the law on state-owned property doesn't mean you don't get involved. SPD responds to the crimes that occur there. Mayor Bruce Harrell could send them in right this moment, but he doesn't want to get involved. He doesn't want to get involved because the truth is his position is exactly the same as the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. It's exactly the same as Governor Jay Inslee. It takes a lot for the city of Seattle to actually sweep. They'll sweep. They're capable of it. They do it from time to time, but it takes a lot. And they don't want to get involved because they want to get these people free homes. That's what the Democrat response to homelessness now is. It shifted over the course of the last couple of years. During COVID in particular, they all decided to say, well, this is about housing affordability. We need more affordable housing. If we had affordable housing, we wouldn't have homeless people. They push this lie. And it's just that. It is a lie. That the folks who are living outside were put outside because of high rents. That is, of course, absurd. It's absurd on its face. And you know this because you can look at your own circumstance. If all of a sudden the rent went from whatever it is now for you, let's just say $2,200 for your family, and it went to $10,000, we'll go overboard on purpose, would you just immediately become homeless? No, you would move to a different place. I can't find any place that's affordable. Really? Okay. Then you would get roommates. You would move in with family. We're supposed to believe that all these people who are outside are just like you and me. They were one missed paycheck away from landing out on the street. It's just a lie. And you know it is. You can see it. You see the homeless. They're overwhelmingly addicts or dealing with mental illness or both. Usually both. One drives the other. They're there breaking the law. No one wants to do anything. And they say, well, state-owned land, there's only so much we can do. What do you think is going to happen? Governor Inslee is going to sue you, Bruce Harrell, if you go in and clear this encampment? It's utter nonsense. It's utter nonsense. And it doesn't matter that it's kids that are the ones who are being harmed and are in harm's way. They don't seem to care at a city level. When it comes to homeless, we let them do whatever it is they want, including jumping on buses, taking over buses, and smoking fentanyl. Which brings us to what else is trending.
What's trending on the bus?
After getting sick from fentanyl smoke, from homeless addicts, you've got bus drivers with both King, I should say transit drivers, bus drivers with King County, but light rail drivers or operators with Sound Transit, they're coming forward and saying, hey, this is dangerous. We're in need of support. We've got people who are smoking fentanyl on our buses, on our trains. It's making us sick. And what's making us nauseous, a different kind of sick, is looking at the county public health, Seattle King County Public Health Department, and their website claiming that fentanyl smoke poses no risk. No big deal. It's no big deal at all. There's a post written by Dr. Scott Phillips of the Washington Poison Center, and it's on their website, on the King County Seattle Public Health Department website. And it says that there's, quote, no real risk for the everyday person being exposed to secondhand opioid smoke. Wow. It's odd because I could have sworn that they use hazmat suits when they have to remove some of this stuff when it's left on a bus. But I guess it's only, they're not everyday people, the ones who are cleaning it up. Bus drivers, everyday people. So Cuomo reached out to them and said, hey, Dr. Phillips, could you maybe give us a little more detail, because you got these bus drivers. Let's say you're a bus driver and you're exposed to the fentanyl smoke that's being smoked literally a few feet away. What's not to be concerned with in that situation? He doesn't answer. He refuses to answer. Instead, he says, quote, your question regarding a hypothetical bus driver exposure scenario has too many variables with which to provide you a reasonable scientific answer. So, number one, it's not hypothetical. It's actually happening. Number two, you say there's no real risk to the everyday person. Man, that sounds like there would be a whole lot of variables of which you should not be able to deliver a scientific answer. He's not delivering a scientific answer. These are the people who told you to wear masks outside. These are the people who told you the vaccine stops the spread of COVID. These are the people who told you that if you touch a grocery bag that someone with COVID touched, oh my gosh, you're going to die of COVID. These are the ones who told you your kids are especially vulnerable. We got to keep them home from school. None of this is a hypothetical. It's happening right now. And the county refuses to do anything.
But if they have this, you know, super cautious stance on everything, you would think they would flip it the other way when it comes to fentanyl smoke, right?
Here's why they don't.
The prevention?
No, here's why they don't. The word starts with a D, and it ends with stigmatize.
I mean, I get it, but it's just so stupid, right? It's so stupid.
Of course it's stupid. Listen to this woman who's a social worker who said this at a meeting last year.
We're not seeing folks developing secondhand exposure from touching, from, you know, this is just not happening.
It's just not happening, as bus drivers are saying they're feeling sick as a result of the exposure. It's just not happening. She goes on to say she wants addicts to get high on the bus because if they overdose, then someone's around to help. I don't even know how it's possible to overdose on fentanyl smoke. Fentanyl smoke seems pretty safe, according to
harmless.
Public health.
Harmless.
I mean, for the average person, it's pretty much harmless. Stephen Williams is a bus driver for Metro. Cuomo featured him in that story we covered last week. He spoke at a health board meeting this week.
I have a migraine headache every day.
You're a liar. They just said there's no real harm. Why are you lying, Stephen? What's going on? What's going on, man? You're a liar, according to public health.
From the fentanyl or whatever other chemical they're smoking on the bus. And you got health department people here saying that it makes no one sick. That is ridiculous.
Of course.
It makes me so sick where a neurologist has me on two medications.
No, it's all in your head. You're making it up. That's what public health seems to believe. It's not like you have anybody else who's a bus driver who's experienced this claiming the same thing. Oh, you do? His name is Eric.
And saying that there is no harm emboldens people to get on our buses and use. I know from personal experience that although I may not have been high on the drug, I have twice been relieved of duty because I could no longer drive the bus after being exposed to actual smoke.
Well, he must be lying, too. It must be a conspiracy. I bet you their buddies, they got together and they said, hey, let's make a big to-do about this so we can get some time off. I bet you that has to have happened, right?
That'd be a decent strategy.
Why would public health lie to us about...
I don't know.
I mean, granted, again,
they
don't want to stigmatize
right?
people who are dealing with fentanyl abuse because they think that that'll stop people from getting treatment by enabling them to continue to use. This, of course, is not just an issue in Seattle or King County. It's happening in places like Bellingham. Let's find out what's trending there.
What's trending? Wait, what?
They've got a judge by the name of Deborah Lev who seems to be acknowledging that she's not likely going to put people accused of a drug-related crime in jail because she doesn't care about the law. She'll pick and choose the laws to follow. God forbid you get caught doing something illegal. As long as it's not a drug issue, I'm sure you're gonna suffer some consequences. But if you're a drug addict who's breaking into homes, breaking into cars, robbing people, so you can steal things that you sell on the black market so you can afford to buy your fentanyl pill as you're chasing hit after hit after hit, fix after fix after fix. She wants you to go into some sort of quote-unquote therapeutic court. And because of that position, she gets a puff piece by King Five and Eric Wilkinson, who spoke with her.
They feel like sometimes for the first time in their life that they're seen as a person.
Wow, the first time in their life, up until this moment that they get in front of Judge Deborah Lev and are offered therapeutic court, first time in their life they ever felt like a person. Up until then, they felt just lost and confused. No one around them loved them. They, in fact, grew up just from broken families who hated them. Every single one of them. It's the first time for some of them ever that they felt like a person. Wow. Now, they're at a crisis level in Bellingham. It is March 17th as I do this show. March 17th. As of now, there have been 87 overdoses. I'm presuming fatal. King 5 doesn't tell you if it's fatal or not. I'm assuming it's fatal. 87. Last year was 70. March 17th, it's at 87. All last year was at 70. That's not good. That's not good. Which is why city leaders are now apparently proposing therapeutic court for the nonviolent drug offenders, where they're going to pretend the addict will get drug counseling, other treatment that they need. They'll get the wraparound services as a way to get out of jail, stay out of jail. And I love this part from King 5. If defendants fail to complete their conditions, they could be sentenced to jail, but more likely to community service that, of course, they also won't show up to. They won't do the community service, but we're going to keep them out of jail to commit more crimes in search of that next fix.
Connecting the individual to the community.
Uh-huh.
So that they can see,
yeah,
that it matters, oh, that they're a member of the community.
Oh, so they don't feel that way now because they're high. But if they continue to stay high and not go to court-ordered counseling and treatment, they will, while still high, go to community service and then at that point feel like they're a part of the community. Does that make sense to anybody? Or does it sound, what I think the technical word is, stupid? Well, the technical word I had in my head I can't say on the radio. So I decided to go with stupid. Because that, I feel like, is everyone knows what I'm saying then.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I mean,
that's,
here's what I'll turn off my mic and I'll mouth it to you.
Okay.
That's bad.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That was a step imagine up than I what said, I expected.
Imagine if I said that on the radio instead of just calling you that,
wow,
during the commercial break. Yeah, that's how bad it is. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. It's the Jason Rand Show.
To get started.
Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message on this Friday afternoon. Fox News is reporting that Biden family members ended up receiving over $1 million in various payments from accounts related to Hunter Biden's business associate, Rob Walker, and their Chinese business ventures back in 2017. They found out this information courtesy of a subpoenaed financial record, or really a series of records, obtained by the House Oversight Committee. Now, this guy named Rob Walker, he worked with Hunter Biden. He worked with the president's brother, Jim, as well as their business associate, James Gilyar and Tony Bobulinski. You know that name. It happened for a joint venture called Cinehawk Holdings, and it was meant to be a partnership with an energy firm based out of China. Now, James Comer, the congressman from Kentucky, who is the chairman of this committee, got these records after subpoenaing. That's a hard word to say, ing at the end.
Understand.
After offering,
it's not natural.
After giving a subpoena to Bank of America. How about that? That was better. And he says it revealed at least three family members ended up getting these payments from a bank account belonging to Walker. The account is labeled as Robinson Walker LLC. And one of the family members is Haley Biden, the widow of Beau Biden, the president's son who died tragically. James Comer was on Fox News this morning and America's Newsroom and said, "Oh, they did not expect us to get this."
So they've denied the existence of these payments directly to the Biden family all the way until the day that we actually produced bank records. I don't think the White House ever thought that I would get my hands on those bank records. And I've got some bad news for the White House. This is just the beginning. And we've been meeting with people that have been blowing the whistle on this influence peddling scheme for several months now.
Now, in a lot of ways, this is coming full circle. We talked last last week or maybe a week and a half ago with Andy Biggs, congressman from Arizona, about this very issue, that you've got all of these financial records out there that they know, that Republicans know exist, but the Biden administration pretends otherwise until, of course, they're revealed. And then they end up saying, well, this was an attack against the Biden family, which was effectively what the statement from the White House said today or yesterday afternoon. Now, they say, according to the committee, President Biden's daughter-in-law was romantically involved with Hunter at some point, which is just, what's going on with this family? Everything is wrong. He's in a shower with his daughter early on when she was younger, and now you got Hunter Biden hooking up possibly with Beau Biden's widow. Just everything's wrong. But she received a payment from Walker's account totaling $25,000. They say the records revealed that on March 1st, 2017, less than 2 months after then Vice President Joe Biden left office, State Energy HK Limited, this is a separate Chinese company, wired $3 million to that Robinson Walker LLC account. And then the money was distributed amongst the group that I just mentioned. This is not necessarily like a smoking gun saying Joe Biden was involved in anything. But my God, where there's smoke, there's fire, and there's a lot of smoke here. The more we learn, the worse it looks for Joe Biden and certainly his son, who's involved now in a lawsuit. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. Meanwhile, Ron DeSantis in the last week made a statement about Ukraine. Tucker Carlson tonight reached out to all of the Republican either candidates for president or the people that we think are going to run for president. That included Greg Abbott. It included, obviously, the people who have already announced, like Vivek Ramaswamy or Donald Trump and Nikki Haley. But obviously, they reached out to Ron DeSantis as well because he's running. And the questions were pretty simple, and it really boiled down to, what do you make of the war in Ukraine and our role in supporting Ukraine? Like, what would you do? Do you support what it is that we're doing? And Ron DeSantis's team put out a statement to Tucker Carlson saying, while the U.S. has many vital national interests, becoming further entangled in a territorial dispute between Ukraine and Russia is not one of them. He says, at the end of the day, peace has to be our objective here. However, the U.S., quote, should not provide assistance that could require the deployment of American troops or enable Ukraine to engage in offensive operations beyond its borders. He specifically cited the F-16s and long-range missiles as being off the table. Now, the funny thing is, because he spoke out against this particular war, and I say spoke out in a very sort of mild way, because his position is shared by the majority of America. The position he just said of what we shouldn't be engaging in or enabling is 100% in line with the majority of the American people. Who thinks we should put troops on the ground in Ukraine or, God forbid, Russia? Anyone? Other than, you know, the war hawks on both sides of the aisle? American people don't want that. Period. End of story. This current administration says it doesn't want this. This current administration says that F-16s are off the table. For how much longer, I don't know. But that's the current position of this administration. And yet, DeSantis is now being attacked. He's under attack from the people who don't support any kind of meaningful ceasefire. There was a comment today by the White House about how, you know, a ceasefire at this point doesn't really make much sense. And we know that, and we've talked about this before, the Biden administration got in the way of a ceasefire between Ukraine and Russia. Why? Because there are benefits to war for a lot of these people. The people who are perpetually keeping us in a state of war or state of conflict or trying to push us in that direction, both on the Republican side and the Democrat side, it's very lucrative for them. It's lucrative for their friends. It's lucrative for the military-industrial complex. It gives them power over other countries, not just our own, but other countries. And the second that DeSantis came out and said, we shouldn't really get involved, every left-wing news outlet, every war hawk went after him. Democrat after Democrat. Some Republicans did too. But a lot of Democrats. Morning Joe was all over it. They're still talking about it. I would say Ari Melber, but all he does is January 6th stuff and Trump. It's insane. But you have Nicole Wallace going over. You're using Putin talking points, which is a talking point from the Democrat Party. Did you notice that every Democrat, both in and out of the media, who are critical, they will say, this is a Putin talking point. This is straight from the Kremlin. They all say that, right? It's because they're being told that that is the talking point they are told to push, because then people will have heard it many, many, many times, kind of like a commercial. When you hear it enough or you see it enough, you start to remember things about it. And then you're like, oh, the next time I need my carpets cleaned, I'll go with Jason Rancho's sponsor, alpineclean.com. That's how it works. Same thing with this talking point coming from the left. And in fairness, the right does it too. All politicians do it. But that's the talking point. So now you got Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, going on MSNBC and telling other people on MSNBC who have already used the talking point, that very same talking point.
I am not an expert on geopolitics.
No, you're none, and that's why you should have not continued your answer. But you didn't stop.
But I will say this. I think it's really...
By the way, don't start ever by saying this. Don't ever do this. I am not an expert on the topic I'm about to give a very long answer to. Don't ever start a conversation that way.
Why? It helps your credibility, doesn't it?
This is so... I'm not an expert in this field. In fact, I don't know what it is I'm talking about, but let me say this. With a level of confidence that betrays the statement I just basically told you.
Dangerous when politicians are using language that is coming out of the Kremlin. There's no question that calling it a territorial dispute is to undermine and downplay the Russian invasion, the illegal Russian invasion of Ukraine. And a state that has such a robust Ukrainian population, it is offensive, maddening, and I think it's really dangerous for our national security.
Well, it's so dangerous. I mean, I don't know what it is I'm talking about, and I just said that. But it's very dangerous. It's a Kremlin talking point. I think I heard someone else say that. I think it was, what was it, Senator Chris Coons from Delaware?
I'm gravely concerned that we've got some significant voices in the Republican Party suggesting that this isn't a national security interest. I'm suggesting, as the governor of Florida just did, that this is merely a territorial dispute.
It's just a territorial dispute, but it's not. How dare them? Dare they say that? Sure, it started by Russia going into territory that it does not control, and it is technically a dispute, but we should not say that. It's not only that. Well, what else is it? It's a national security threat. Well, he disagrees with that. But so? He's wrong, is he? Or does he just hold a different view than you do? At some point, we've heard this over and over and over again, when you say a certain position as it has to do with race, that's, you're a white supremacist for holding that view. I just said I don't like racial segregation. White supremacist! When they didn't like what you said about COVID, you're spreading misinformation. That's disinformation. And now when you don't get in lockstep with the folks who are rooting for a war, which could lead to World War III, with a country led by a maniac who has access to nukes and a whole lot of them, well, you're just on his side. You're using Kremlin talking points. You're a Russian propagandist. What, are you getting paid by Russia? Are you getting paid by Ukraine? I don't know anyone, including DeSantis, and they do this with Tucker all the time. I don't know anyone who is critical of the way the United States is getting involved in the Ukraine conflict. I don't know anyone saying, I want Russia to win. Everyone is on the side of Ukraine. You can be on the side of Ukraine and also hold a position that we should not be getting involved. Why is it that we're not involved in China and the issue of the Uyghurs? Why is that? There's a genocide going on. I want to presume that we're against genocide. Why aren't we getting involved militarily to help? Any ideas?
I'm not an expert.
Well, neither is Gretchen Whitmer.
Oh, well, yeah, she's...
I would argue you're probably more of an expert than Gretchen.
Well, thank you.
But we don't get... That's not a compliment. The bar is very, very low.
Well, at least there's somebody below me.
That's okay, fair enough.
That's all I need to celebrate.
You showed joy at that, so now I'm going to say you're equal footing. The reason why we're not getting involved in China is because we don't want to get involved in a war with a country that could completely deplete our stock of ammunition to weaponry, right? That it doesn't make sense to get involved militarily. It could cause a whole host of unintended consequences. Well, is it, so by saying that, are we China supporters? Are we sympathetic to the communist regime? Do we not support the Uyghurs? No, we go about it in a slightly different way. And yet when it comes to Russia and Ukraine, all of a sudden no one holds that exact same position of, okay, maybe you just disagree. The way we are treating things with China and the Uyghurs, where we're not getting accused of anything. It's very odd. 1-800-465-877 if you want to jump in and have a conversation. You can send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. I was on Fox Business this morning and Varney and Company. If you missed it, shame on you. I only ask that you watch everything I do on TV. But don't worry, I posted it online, facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. We've got an update to a story, an interesting update to an exclusive story that we covered here on the Jason Rantz Show on KTTH, where Seattle Public Schools decided to embrace racial segregation, holding a potluck lunch today, in fact, over at Lincoln High School. It was invite only. And the only people were invited were students of color and staff of color. And now, after our exclusive reporting, they've changed the event. They changed the event today. They updated it to say any student is invited. It's so weird, but I thought that they were okay with the racial segregation. Turns out maybe they're not. This was all being done for Multicultural Week. It ended today, and it was intended to, quote, promote cultural visibility. And of course, when you tell people they can't show up to an event that supposedly highlights different cultures, you're not really promoting cultural visibility, making it invisible, or you're making it exclusive. It's kind of ironic, I thought. And now they decided to change without apparently making a big deal about it. They put this update on their site. They just changed the language. They updated it yesterday afternoon. And part of the newsletter says, as part of our celebration this week, a number of our student union clubs have planned a combined lunch gathering on Friday. This has been part of the planning of our student leaders. As with all of our clubs, any student is invited to join and bring their lunch on Friday. Huh. But that's not what it originally said, was it?
It wasn't.
No, it wasn't. And then again, ironically here, because I pointed out that when they emailed the racially segregated invite around, it had at the bottom of the email a link to the non-discrimination policy. Well, in this update, they said our school and Seattle Public Schools support the inclusion of all students in any interscholastic club, athletic activity, or recreational activity. I told people that they should email any complaints, should they feel inspired to, about the discrimination, and then a day later they change everything. So odd.
Yeah, why'd they change their mind?
Yeah, I wonder why. Maybe they realized that I highlighted the fact that what they did was not just illegal but racist. I shouldn't have to do that. And again, let's just note the irony, because we're told over and over and over again by folks on the left that it's Republicans who are racist. We traffic in white supremacy, even when it's someone who's black on the right. And yet it's just the folks on the left who are promoting the racial segregation. I haven't heard of a conservative school or a school in a conservative area promoting racially segregated events. I haven't. I haven't seen any conservative educators say, we're only going to allow certain types of people here, only cisgendered white men. Haven't heard any of those stories. And again, I'm told oftentimes, that I'm just making these stories up. I see this on Twitter a lot when my tweets go viral or when my tweets get retweeted by someone else with a large following. It's like, you're just making this up. They don't have racially segregated meetings. I'm like, I do include a link. You can literally click on it and see. No, you're making it up. Well, then what's the screenshot? You're making it up. No, I heard you. I'm asking you now to respond to the fact that I'm showing evidence that I'm not making it up. You're making it up. That's all they do. The conservative talk show host should not be the one telling the woke, tolerant educators in this state that racial segregation is wrong. I shouldn't have to. I will do it. Why do I do it? Number one, because it's wrong, and I think we have to right these wrongs. Number two, it's because a lot of you see this, and you feel like you don't have the power to change it. And maybe you don't. I disagree. I think a lot of you undercut the amount of power you have when you organize. But I certainly acknowledge I have a large platform. Talking about it on Fox News helps. And so I am able to get the pressure done. But no one else is doing it. That's the real reason. No one else is covering these stories. Cuomo's not. Cairo's not. King's definitely not. They celebrate this kind of stuff. Fox 13 isn't. Seattle Times isn't. No one else is covering it. Why is that? Why are they okay with racial segregation? Because they fear that they'll be called racist for calling this out. Oh, the irony. And I've taken a position. Okay, call me racist. I don't care. Go ahead. Call me racist. That word doesn't mean anything anymore. So you guys did this. I mean, I did this. But you guys really. Well, no, I'm going to. I did this. I got to change. But you helped. It's the Jason Rant Show.